Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Brett Ward. Brett is a senior vice president with Wicklander Zarlosky & Associates, the premier non-confrontational interview and interrogation training and advisory firm in North America. Brett has over 30 years of investigative interviewing experience. He has conducted thousands of training engagements, and he has educated hundreds of thousands of participants. He's conducted countless investigative interviews in both the public sector and the private sector, and these are looked upon by many, including myself, as a mentor. And I'm really excited to share his thoughts, his insights, his perceptions with everybody today. I've known Brett for nearly 20 years, and he even surprised and impressed me with some of the things that he brought out in this conversation that I hadn't heard him say before. So when we look up to the conversation, he is going to talk about, first and foremost, how people are predisposed to protect their self-interests. And that should never hurt our feelings. He's going to talk a lot about how he applies the lessons he learned in the interrogation room outside of the interrogation room with the classes that he teaches in his business conversations and in his family conversations, what it takes to connect with people and encourage them essentially to share sensitive information. He is going to discuss the fact that interrogation equals collaboration. And if that's not surprising enough for you, he's going to talk about how being a professional interrogator made him a better father. I'm really excited to share this conversation with everybody. Thank you for being here. But before we do, let's take a quick moment and thank our sponsors. If you haven't already, please head over to humantel.com. That's where you can check out their best-in-class online self-paced training to identify what people are likely thinking and feeling at any moment in time by evaluating their changing facial expressions and nonverbal communication. It is all backed by science. Everything is there on the website. I've done it myself. I highly recommend it. And while you're there, enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off of any of the training that you sign up for. All that and more at humantel.com. For the professional interviewers checking in, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can learn more about the International Association of Interviewers. What does it take to qualify for membership? What's available to members, from online training to in-person engagement events, networking, job support, legal and other updates, all that and more. That is also where you can learn about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. What does it take to qualify for the exam? How do you pass the exam? And then once you have, how do you maintain your designation? And what could that potentially mean for you and your career? All that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And while you're online, please check out inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the customized engagements our clients ask us to facilitate to their senior leadership, their sales team, and their HR team when they are looking for a partner to teach their teams how to help people save face so they can obtain the everyday confessions to strengthen their relationships and achieve better results within their organization. All that and more over at inquasive.com. Appreciate y'all continuing to come back for these conversations. Thank you so much. And now, without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Brett Ward. Brett Ward, always a pleasure to see you, my man. Thank you so much for doing this today. How are you?
Great, man. My pleasure. It's always good to see you as well. I'm glad I was able to connect with you a month ago or so when traipsing through your backyard up there in the beautiful Carolinas. Happy to do it, man.
Well, it was a pleasure to host you. We actually managed to see each other twice in like a 3-month window, which is more than we've seen each other in the last 10 years, probably. But so I'm very happy that worked out. And for people who know you and are listening to this, we should also tell them that you're squeezing in this interview post-hurricane in a thunderstorm, and you had to find an alternate location to do it. And for people who know you and know your luck and your background, that's like the perfect backdrop for this conversation. So I really appreciate you making it work.
All good, brother. Yeah, I mean, karma follows me. I've got so many sins to pay off at this point in time. I've lived in Houston. This is the fourth time now. I escape. This place keeps dragging me back into it. Second I get back, of course, hurricane rolls through. And I was even laughing because when I was coming over here to set up, we had an incredible thunderstorm just start coming through that was unplanned. And I thought, you know what? This is about par for the course, right? You know, our timing works out to where even with the power back on, the power very well may go off. But all good. Plenty of time. We'll make it happen, man.
We'll figure it out. So we probably have 16 hours of conversation we could record at minimum without even really repeating a whole lot we've already talked about recently. But really, for the people who listen, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, you've been a friend, you've been a mentor. I've learned so much from you in so many different ways, and looking to share some of that with the short window that we have today. So we'll go in a bunch of different directions. But when I think back to people who played a pivotal part, not only in my career, but in my interrogation career, you're at the top of the list, from when we met to advice you gave me to how you changed my perspective. So I'm curious, knowing you on a personal level and knowing how you approach it, people have lots of stereotypes on how interrogators think and act and what they want and what they do. But what is being a professional interviewer taught you about people?
Yeah, great question. By the way, you've taught me as much as I've taught you, and I thoroughly enjoyed the time that we were able to work together, and I'm still angry at you for leaving. But you know, I love you and the family too, so we'll let that be water under the bridge. Having been in this field, you know, 26 and a half with this outfit, almost 10 with another, what you learn when you're in this industry for this long is that, A, you mature over time. So when you're young and you're hungry and you're growing, you have a different set of ideals and different set of goals when you communicate with people. But the older I've gotten, the more I've realized is that just human beings are naturally inclined to defend their best interests. And we should not be emotional about it. We shouldn't have our feelings hurt when we sit down and talk with somebody who may or may not be as forthcoming as we hope. I mean, just think about it, just in our own personal lives, man, we're all so right in all of our righteousness. We get in the most ignorant of conversations with people that we truly love, you know, our inner circle, and become immediately defensive and feel like we need to stand our ground. So that's a good thing to remember, you know, when you're going out and you're training people or you're actually conducting these things, is there should not be emotion tied into this. What it should be is a collaboration. You know, we can thank the media, especially on this piece of soil. I think I've traveled pretty much all over the world at this point in time, but this piece of soil alone is very, very good at pushing a definition onto people that is ridiculously out of the zip code of accurate. And there's 4,200 shows on TV right now that deal with, you know, either law enforcement or interview and interrogation. And, you know, it's always like a basement during a thunderstorm with metal chairs and cement floors. And that's just not how professionals engage in this. But that's the mindset of a lot of people is, okay, I'm being called on the carpet. I've got somebody coming to assess whether or not I want to be honest about it. Let me be as defensive as possible, not having the understanding of the process. So when you come in and you kind of change the psychology of that conversation, it does capture curiosity. It's a unique conversation. And they realize that we're there to mediate. You know, no professional interrogator on the planet walks off a plane thinking my goal today is to get somebody to admit. And if that is their goal, they're in the wrong line of work. But yeah, I mean, it's a great question, Mike. I mean, you just learn over time how people think of all cultures, of all ages, and how to attempt to motivate them uniquely, you know, based on their DNA, their SOP thought process of how this is going to play out. But man, I've learned a lifetime about human beings over the last, you know, almost 40 years of doing this.
You know, I agree with everything that you just said. We're of very similar mindsets. I love the way that you just illustrated it. Of all the conversations we've had and people who you and I have similar mindsets and experiences, this is the first time I've heard somebody directly equate interrogation to collaboration, but to do it the right way, that is so true. If we walk into a room and say, sit down and tell me everything that you did, let me know how that works out. And to your point, it's true in our personal lives, in our professional lives. in the investigative realm as well. So all very well said. And you talk about needing to connect with people uniquely, which we all know is very true as well. It's how many times did we sit down trying to figure out which videos to use to put programs together? And it's who was the interviewer? Who was the subject? What was the case? What was the strategy? How did they do it? So again, when you look back across all your experience and everything that you've done through your experience, why do you believe that people chose to tell you the truth so often?
It wasn't because of my skill set. It was because of being incredibly disciplined and strategic. You know me, Mike. You know my personality. You know that upon going to work with this outfit, I was working in the private sector for about an hour before getting kicked out and tossed over in the law enforcement and federal world, just so that I wouldn't end up on the wall of shame on every evaluation. But I have worked for a lot of people who were incredibly, one, savvy, but two, willing to look me in the eyes and say, you don't know what the hell you're doing, and I'm going to break this down and build you back up so that you can be more disciplined, more strategic, more mindful. And I think just, one, outworking people helps. Being a little bit more savvy because of training, of course, helps. I wish my own inner circle felt comfortable enough to be honest with me at times. But I've also learned that, you know, lying in general is such a huge umbrella. You know, lying doesn't always come with maliciousness. Sometimes it comes with anxiousness and nervousness and just pure fret. And again, just maturing and understanding this and being able to maneuver through a conversation with different MOs and different personalities, I feel like I've been able to be smarter, you know, as I've gotten older. And if you're disciplined and if you're willing to follow strategic technique and not, we all have to have personalities, right? If you don't have a personality and you don't have a little bit of savviness, this is going to be a tough industry to be in because you got to be able to bob and weave. But you also have these MOs out there of borderline narcissism where it's like, I don't care what I was taught or, you know, how the other person I watch do it. I'm going to do it at my comfort level. I'll get to the finish line the way I want to do it. I just don't think that ever was allowed for me, you know, during my career based on the people that I was fortunate enough to work for. So I think just pure discipline.
That's a great way to put it. You talked about being able to bob and weave as well. But I also watched you time and time again be who the person in front of you needed you to be.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I watched you interrogate, well, via video, I wasn't in the room, of course, but I watched you interrogate senior executives. I watched you interrogate hourly workers, male, female, different cultures, different. So across the board, you know, criminals, you know, so there wasn't always corporate, you know, I've watched videos of your criminal interrogations as well. And being who the person in front of you needs to be, I feel like is a skill that a lot of people underestimate or underappreciate. And one of the things that I learned from you and Wayne and others as well is the ability to put our ego in our back pocket. Like it's not about us. It's not what I need to feel. It's what do you need to experience so you will share the truth and help move this process forward. And that is a core lesson that lines up with all aspects of our life and all aspects of communication.
Agreed. I think that I had a couple of things going for me early on before I even knew what I was going to do with my life. One, I grew up in a military family. So the constant moving, I mean, I'm a mutt, man. I've lived everywhere, Gulf Coast, Deep South, Midwest, overseas. I mean, that has been massively beneficial to have that kind of exposure and be able to just effectively communicate and effectively negotiate with all walks of life and not stereotype groups or not think about different people from different age groups or ethnicities or religions or other countries as anything other than the next human being that I need to address. and having that background of moving all over the place, so being able to interact with different personalities, different speeds, different inflections, different mindsets, different mental capacities, I think was massively beneficial in my career. The other thing that I think helped me personally was being an athlete, my whole life, from the time of Gabe's age all the way, college. And that competitive component, I think, helps people on our field as well, that they're not willing to settle for average. And that includes effort, preparation. It's just a particular mindset that I think is massively beneficial in this field. But again, as an athlete, you're exposed to anything and everything as far as all walks of life. And you consider the military family, you consider your team family. So you're not, looking at individuals and things like that, but you're able to see how people think and how they react and how they communicate and what their comfort level is. And are they good in front of a group, or do they need to be solo when you communicate with them? There's just so many different factors there that I think, play a role.
And that leads to an appreciation and an understanding of, in many ways, the universality of the human experience. Like you said, who's the next human being? And then we build on that universality for where does the adjustment need to be made to connect with them. Our friend Justin talks about this a lot, too. He's been in a lot of different situations, a lot of different environments in his life. And we've often joked that that experience that we had made us more successful, or gave us the opportunity to be more successful than some of the people that might have come up in one environment or with a more kind of strict good guy, bad guy attitude going into this. So I'm very happy to hear you bring up the military brat experience growing up, and then the athlete as well, and how all of those life experiences help you connect with another person. And when you think about getting the truth, all it is connecting with somebody on the level that they need to be connected with. That's what it boils down to. Yeah. So having the techniques help, but if you can do that, if you can adapt to connect with somebody the way they need to at home, in business, as an investigator, you are 2/3 of the way to where you need to go.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. That, different exposures and, of course, repetition, obviously, you can practice all day long, but until you're going live fire, it's a little bit different of a ball game. But yeah, just having that constant exposure to anything and everything, and movement and mindset and mental capacities and intellectual capacities, and it's just hugely important. And here's another thing that I've learned too: you don't know what you don't know. Sometimes you get out there, especially, when you're training and you get certain questions. And early on in my career, I go, okay, this, maybe we need to add a day onto this contract. And the older I got, I went, no, this is, I've heard this question so many times. It's so valid that people who are learning how to do this from other untrained people are at such a massive disadvantage. And you know this. People get into repetition. They get this idealism of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, which is about as lazy a comment as there ever was. I'm so tired of, people feeling like certificates on the wall or initials after their name prove competence. What that proves is you're willing to further your education, which is fantastic. A lot of that doesn't pull in when you're live fire. And again, you can go to all the classes in the world and you got people that can pass tests like nobody's business. And some of them couldn't get the truth out of my 24-year-old. And you just kind of, you shake your head, in frustration of where's the adaptability? Where's the listening skills? Like what you wrote in your book, there were so many incredible points in it. I even took a class in college called listening, thought I was going to bring up my GPA. That one backfired on me. But it was it kind of set the tone for me too, not knowing what I was going to do in my career. But yeah, further education and just being willing to be somebody different. If you walk in with your MO and your mindset and your tonal qualities and your gaze and, all the things that are natural to you, again, you're not going to make it in this industry.
And you're going to struggle in a lot of other positions too. Yeah. Even with the listening work that we do, if we're prioritizing ourselves and our emotions in a conversation, we're falling behind fast. Yeah. It's all about prioritizing what the other person needs to feel and experience to achieve an outcome. And it's true in the interrogation room. It's true in sales. It's true in negotiation. It's true at the kitchen table. It's true across the board. And you talked about adaptability, and we just mentioned the different, you know, types of conversations. How have you learned? Let me ask that question a better way. What have been some of the most successful ways that you've adapted what you've learned in the interrogation room to help you in conversations outside of investigations?
Yes, there's so much carryover, right? I mean, some of the things that we talk about in the interrogation room, you know, maladaptive behavior, the art of empathy, how to assess proper timing, the ability to come in with a plan A and understand very quickly your plan A blows and it's time to go to plan B, but not look like a doofus when you're making that transition. Every part of that is coaching. It's being a good parent. It's being a good spouse, a good friend, a good leader. It's damn important as a professional interviewer, interrogator, to be able to do those, because those four components are a part of sales. You know, they're a part. I took over a new role with WZ earlier this year. Still going to be out in the field. I ain't giving it up. But I'm going to be in a position now where I can have a little bit more influence on growth for our organization, and sitting down and instead of getting on planes to go yap for 2 or 3 days, I can get on planes to go yap at clientele and convince them that we're one of the players. You know, we're one of the players out there. And some of that is exactly what we do in the interview room, in the interrogation room. So it's compatible in pretty much basic human communication. So once you're disciplined enough to get some of these components down that I mentioned, you know, a second ago, it should be a natural transition just when coaching an employee who's not doing so hot or purchasing a new vehicle. You know, I've helped a couple of people do that several times because they're just not comfortable in that back and forth. And that's what we do. You know, that's what we do. And you don't have to change anything. It's the exact same concept. Let people feel like they're a part of the negotiation. Make sure that both parties walk out feeling like they won to a degree, and be, you know, be professional.
For sure. And like going from the very beginning when you started talking, going back to defensiveness is natural. Yep. Lying is a natural reaction, you know, wanting to withhold information. Cool. So we were very fortunate, as funny as this may inadvertently sound, that people paid us to go talk to people who wanted nothing to do with us. Like, couldn't want to talk to anybody else on the planet any less than they did talking to us. And that's not just the suspects. That was the victims. That was the witnesses. And honestly, sometimes it was the clients that hired us who did not want to share all the details of how bad they screwed it up before they called us. And so when you talk to people and you're the last person that they want to speak with, and yet at the end of the conversation, things are written down, we're shaking hands, we're moving on. When you can adapt that mindset of they're supposed to withhold information, they're supposed to be defensive. Okay, that's how this works. Cool. So now let's go back to the strategy you talked about. Let's go back to the techniques that you talked about. Let's go back to the professional approach, allowing people to save face. And you talk about sales, allowing someone to walk themselves through an educational conversation that results in them giving you the information you need to help them convince themselves this is the deal they need to buy, is the exact same as walking somebody through an educational interrogation that causes them to give you the information to make them feel comfortable. I may as well just tell you everything.
The correlation is so obvious when you're on the inside. But I can completely see folks on the outside who are like, how in the hell would I apply this to going in and having a conversation with my kid's principal who's unhappy with him, you know, and to be able to negotiate through that process to have them understand where we're coming from, but at the same time, don't make them feel like we're trying to dominate the conversation or tell them how not to do their job. Yeah, I mean, the nitty gritty of what we do is trying to convince people to stay in that chair. Keep that line of communication open. Hear less, listen more. Be willing to be a part of the process versus just psychologically shutting down and thinking, okay, I've lost already. Why in the world would I even want to be a part of this? Yeah, I mean, the correlations are tomato, tomato, you know, in my brain. But you have to have them. You have to have them. So, you know, when you get out there and you recognize and you're so right, man. I remember cases that I went on. I remember one in particular. I'm heading out there next week, Southern California, where the GC was not very thrilled about the organization hiring us to begin with. But the SVP of HR, I guess, convinced. And even when I got out there to initiate, the gentleman didn't even want to shake my hand. But by the end of our time there, he was regretting that it took so long to come to that agreement to allow help, you know, to allow somebody who's got the background to come out and assist. So, yeah, it goes so far beyond a subject or a victim who is in an absolute state of panic out of fear of retaliation or peripherals for the very same reason. It just starts with the next human being. But until you've got the training, what are you going to do? And you don't know what you don't know. That's the frustrating end, is going out and working with 20-year federal agents who got 4 hours of training at the academy level. And you're like, what do you expect from these people? Or, you know, human resource, employee relations, legal professionals, ethics professionals who just get a significant amount of legal training and damn near zero I&I training. And you're just thinking, what are we doing? What are we doing out there? We're just putting people in positions to fail, to become concerned about being willing to even have a conversation. So, yeah.
And then what happens is, and you know as well or better than I do, is I get hired on. I get all that legal training. I get all that technical training. I get 5 minutes of interview and interrogation training, which is mostly anecdotal. And then I get assigned to you in this analogy. You've been doing this for 30 years. You got lucky on an interrogation 25 years ago and decided that's the magic button. You just need to push it every time from now on.
Right.
It works enough to a degree that you've convinced yourself that that's the way to do it. So now you tell me that's what I need to do. It doesn't fit my personality. It doesn't fit who I'm speaking with. I'm trying to force a square peg into a round hole with a spoon, not even a hammer. And it gets worse. And the other thing too, I feel like using, especially the examples you have, whether it's law enforcement, HR, legal and ethics, people who have those jobs, and rightfully so, I don't say this with any negativity at all, typically get into that line of work because they're passionate about the laws, the policies, the procedures, the people, all those things.
Yeah.
So at the very start of this conversation, you talked about there's no need to get emotional. Well, those people are generally predisposed to be more emotional.
Yeah.
Because now you violated the law, you violated the policies, the practices, that what you did is unethical. And so I take that so personally. Now I'm going to get into this conversation. And my goal isn't the truth. My goal is to make sure you know what an unethical human being you are, how ashamed of yourself you should be, and how you need to change your behavior. By the way, tell me everything you did and why.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant way of putting it. You know, and I think at one point in time, if we were all honest with ourselves, when we were getting into this, it bothered the hell out of us too, right? We do all this homework, put together these game plans and go in and recognize, really? You're not going to be honest with me about it? Well, it says right here on page 2-4 that by now you should be kind of working with me on this. You know, and then we get out of our element and go, okay, I'm going to retreat back to what I've been doing forever. And let me just take the quickest possible path. And then, you know, somebody says something that they feel like was beneficial, and these folks are, you know, oh, well done. Oh, good job. Can't wait to watch the video on the flight back type thing. And if they had any inkling of an idea, if they were just a little bit more well-rounded, and by the way, one technique is not sufficient. Not, you know, one interview technique nor one interrogation technique is not sufficient. by a long shot for any professional in this field. So going to one class does not make you James Bond either. But I think we were all probably pretty emotional at this when we first started, and maturity helped us with that. But I will say the one thing that I've always told people too is, if you want to eliminate as much of that as possible, then design before execution. Have a game plan. Take the time to put together your plan A, your plan B, your pack your parachute. Stay focused on the strategy that you're inside versus the human being that's 6 feet in front of you, and recognize what's happening. That really helped me. Was I kind of created this cheat sheet for myself that I would utilize on flights on the way over, where I was physically typing out plan A, plan B. What am I? These are the objections I'm expecting. These are the empathy components I'm going to need to use. Now, these are the assessment questions that I think will be beneficial, and in this order. And if I ask Mike this question and he responds with this, I act like I'm prepared for it. This is what I'm going to say to that, and here's where I'm going to go after that. And once I started doing that, that helped a little bit as well in growth and maturity, because then I was thinking more along the lines of, the only competition that I was in was me. Could I stick to my game plan? Could I be disciplined enough to recognize that I've got to bob and weave inside whatever strategy I'm trying to employ? And then, okay, if it's not doing fantastic, no big deal. That's why I have a plan B. Can I transition into that? So my brain was more centric to the game plan than it was to the fact that somebody wasn't even in the zip code of accurate in front of me, which I should have been anticipating anyway. And you know, this idea that we only have to prepare for subjects being dishonest is asinine. You know, you and I both have had a lot of conversations with people who were bringing forward information, and they weren't in the ballpark of being accurate. And some of them were doing that maliciously, and some of them were doing that just because they were freaked out that they even had to have the conversation to begin with. So let's get past the whole am I going to be lied to thing and focus on, what am I going to do A, B, C, D, and am I going to be able to get out of that straight A, B, C, D and go A, B, M, and then be disciplined enough to come back to C and D, if that's what creates a uniqueness and curiosity in the conversation and keeps that person in that chair.
And curiosity does keep people in the chair. And that's true in sales. It's true with my son. I don't want to be fake. I don't want to be crazy. You know, it's got to be within the bounds of reality. But yeah, curiosity, absolutely. Sometimes it's even just a pause creates enough curiosity. Well, what's he going to say next? Cool. He's not thinking about leaving, and he's actually listening to me. So he'll hear what I say next. All of those things matter. And I really want to underscore the point you made about having a game plan. And I think it's in there as well. But not only having a game plan, understanding the goals that you need to achieve with that game plan. There's another question I want to ask you just based on your personality. But I truly believe, and I learned this the same way you did, I believe, is that if I just focus on, oh, so it's me and Brett right now, let's see if I can get him. Yeah. Well, I'm probably going to get really emotionally invested in this, and I'm going to say and do some dumb stuff. But if I can walk in and say, it doesn't matter what Brett did, it doesn't matter what Brett knows. My job as a tool in this investigation is to capture the truth in as much detail as possible, to let the chips fall where they need to fall after that. Okay. So if my goal is to get the truth, now what game plan do I need to follow in order to get it? And then it almost becomes like watching a movie. I suspend reality. Like, did Chewbacca really exist? I don't care. Right now, he's entertaining me. So yeah, I can go through this conversation and I'm getting lied to. Well, they're supposed to lie to me. That's not the whole story. He's not supposed to tell me the whole story. Ooh, he's trying to act like he's my friend. That's a step in the right direction, but we can expect that too. So being able to go through all of those things, I really think helps keep the emotions at bay. Because instead of focusing on beating you, I'm focusing on achieving a goal with a game plan. But to set up that question I wanted to ask, and we know each other, And you know all about my emotional deficiencies and hair trigger temper and other things you've had to coach me with previously. You have a remarkable way of staying calm and calming others throughout the process. And I'm very curious to know, is that something that you learned to do? Is that something that you intentionally had to work on? Is that something that just came naturally to you? Speaking for me personally, there aren't very many people who within a matter of seconds can calm me down. And you were one of them, but I've watched you do it in any number of interrogation videos. And I've watched you do it in front of any number of rooms where somebody in the room was either trying to take control or going off the deep end or losing it. And you brought them right back. Where did that come from? How do you do it?
I'll tell you this, medication and professional counseling were a massive benefit in that department. I'll be honest with you. Learned behavior, bro. Learned behavior. I remember the first time we met, man. I remember the first time we met and how it felt like, I don't know, it was Tweedledum and Tweedledee having fun in a basement in New York. And that mindset of, you know, just you were not bashful. You were very aggressive. You were willing to speak your piece. You were not going to hold anything back. Just really kind of hit home with me. And I still got a little bit of that, even though I'm in my 50s, somewhere in there. I still got a little bit of that. But maturity, and again, I hate to say it, but just becoming more disciplined as I aged and recognizing what my true goals were. I'll tell you, I've said this a million times, the best interrogators I have ever come across in my career were that way because they were masterful interviewers. Huge difference between those two words. And I think the media portrays it as all big one dumb math package, right? It's just ridiculous how it's thought of. But you mentioned the truth being one of the goals. Amen to that, brother. I mean, that would be handy, right? But more times than not, when we have these conversations, it's not wrapped up in a pretty pink bow. And this is sales and everything else, right? This is, you know, walking into the conversation with Brooke, Gabe, my wife, you know, everybody. The end game is not served on a silver platter. So you don't get to start out with guns a-blazing in these conversations. You better be a damn good interviewer, number one, okay, to get facts, period. Because sometimes some people, man, they ain't never going to get to the truth. They couldn't get to the truth. They couldn't buy it if it was on a shelf for sale. And no system in the world is going to motivate this person to be honest. That's part of the competition, strategy, discipline, technique, allowing this person to basically say, not letting them go way off the rails, but allow them to almost kind of bury themselves to a certain degree by displaying all of this maladaptive communication and all of these omissions and exaggerations and minimizations and fabrications and getting it out. Okay, so that it's just pure facts in front of us and then going back and doing a thorough investigation and saying, none of this is accurate. This came from this person voluntarily. I can tell you, sometimes that's more than enough, right? We don't always have to transition from an interview to an interrogation to be successful. If we know what we're doing on the front end of this properly, getting somebody motivated to say I made a mistake might be beside the point to a certain degree. So, yeah, I think just when I started becoming a better interviewer, I felt like I was really trained pretty well in my previous life on the interrogation component. And I went through classes long before I went to work for this outfit. So I felt like I had a pretty decent understanding of some of the interrogation. I wasn't as good at it as I had hoped at that point. But once I really learned a little bit more on the interviewing components of this, that allowed me to breathe a little bit more and not be as reactionary and not be as emotional during the course of a conversation and just jumping ship and saying, okay, let's get to the freaking point. I'm done with this dance. That's been significant as far as a career path for me.
And you hit so many nails there right on the head. And I do love the, we're not always going to get the "I did it" per se.
Yeah.
If you can get all the reasons why they didn't do it in such detail that the evidence you can come up with proves that they're wrong, you get to the same outcome. And you talk about shifting from plan A to B. That used to be one of my favorite pivots to make. Okay, I'm probably not going to get this guy. So instead of grenading this entire relationship, let's pivot. Let's put him in control of the conversation. Let him feel like he's steering me away from where he needs to be, but he's steering right back into the interview that we did with the client before we ever started.
That's the same thing at the sales table, right?
And
you probably know more about sales than, you've probably forgotten more about sales than I'll ever learn. But when you're at the sales table, yes, it's good to close a deal. Yeah, it's fantastic to gain clientele and build that. But it also could be beneficial long-term to just during that initial communication, initial negotiation, to prove merit, to show professionalism, to highlight all the many reasons of why you're not just about you. You're about the client. And if you aren't the right fit, then let me help you find the right fit. And you go out and you go to somebody else and figure out, damn it, I should have gone with that dude and their organization. That's part of this as well. So yeah, we gotta get our brains around proper goals when we have these conversations, when we walk in. We're not there to win. Okay. What we're there to do is effectively increase rapport and develop relationships with people, garner trust, motivate them to feel confident enough to tell us what we would love to hear when we're in there, but recognize, okay, this, we're at a position right now during this negotiation where I do need to pivot. And if I don't, I'm my mouth's going to write checks that the rest of me can't cash. So let me be professional about this so that when this person walks away, they're thinking nothing but about that conversation that they had with me.
And that gets back to having strategic goals.
Yeah.
Not the tactical goal of this is what I want to hear you say right now. Not the tactical goal of this is what I want to go back and tell my boss I did. Not the tactical goal of this is the impact on my wallet this week. But strategically, long-term, where can this relationship, where can this opportunity, where can this conversation situation take me? It sounds asinine to people when we talked about it. We used to use interview and interrogation as a morale-boosting tool. And when I say that, people look at me like I just got back from Mars. Like, you interrogate people to boost morale? Well, yeah, when you've had a stale investigation for 3 months that everybody's pissed about, if you come in and you handle it the right way, everybody, often including the suspect and the people that were interviewed that had nothing to do with it and initially weren't thrilled about getting interviewed again, they all feel better after the fact. So having those long-term strategic goals and working backwards from there typically gets more mid and short-term success. So you're 1,000% right on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and again, I'd kind of go back to that. You don't know what you don't know. And I don't get frustrated anymore when I'm in the field and come across folks. And I don't care how many certificates they have on the wall, titles, certificates. Fantastic. Put it on your resume. It looks good. What you're looking for is hunger. You know, what you're looking for is moldable. What you're looking for are teachable moments. And quite honestly, man, in my career, the folks that I've come across that I walked away going, holy crap, there's the diamond. And you come across them, you know, a couple times a year, are people that nobody would ever pick out of the crowd. Nobody would ever have picked that person out of the crowd, but they have that MO. They have that mindset of, I'm ready to go to work. Steer me, mold me. You know, we also need to make sure people understand it's okay to push back too. People push back in sales meetings. Our kids push back. Our loved ones push back. Witnesses, subjects, victims, they all push back. It's part of the gig. Get some training on that, man. You know, start there. Start there before even trying to take on, you know, these very disciplined techniques. Work on how can I handle when things aren't going perfectly. It's not all baby ducks and rainbows every time you walk in there. And I think that's when, you know, when a lot of people get off track in our industry, is they revert to bad habits.
Sure. I'm going to have to get Chris on here one of these days, but one of my favorite memories.
Go ahead and apologize up front for whatever he decides to say. No, he's great, dude.
We might have to get some extra editors for that episode. I'm kidding, Chris. But one of my favorite opportunities working with him was, long story short, he had to interrogate somebody in Chicago. I was there. It was supposed to be this really tough interrogation with this really smart, experienced, sarcastic guy, da da da. So we prepared the night before. I went to his hotel room and we did exactly what you're talking about. He gave me the description of how this guy is supposed to act, and I got to be that guy for an hour and a half, whatever it was. So then Chris goes, does a great interview, gets a $250,000 confession or whatever it was. And then we would show it. And how many times have you shown a video and people were like, well, that was easy?
Yeah.
Wasn't anything friggin' easy about that, dude. It was all the work that Chris put in or that you put in ahead of time that made it look that way. Yeah. Is when you think about dealing with the pushback, mm-hmm. is there like a philosophy or an approach or like a set of steps or even like a mindset? How do you conceptually, because I know the words you use are going to be different every time, whatever, but conceptually, how do you put yourself in a situation to successfully deal with that pushback and not get sucked into that unhealthy tug of war?
Yeah, good question. First of all, I'm not surprised about the story about Chris, because the dude's a pro's pro. And he's one of those dudes that's been around a very long time and just absolutely refuses to settle. He just refuses to settle. Okay, so that dude, man, God, talk about somebody who's traveled all over the world. I wonder how many miles he has. Probably double me.
Gotcha.
But again, continuing education. So the first thing, I'll answer this in kind of layers. The first thing is prep, is trying to think through what the psychological hurdles are going to be before you ever enter the sales room, before you ever enter the interview room, and think specifically. Don't think, okay, I'm going to get I wasn't there that day, or, you know, screw you, I don't have to sit here and listen to this. I mean, if we're not prepared for that JV denial, we shouldn't be in lead chair to begin with. Go deeper than that. What is the conversation about? What type of very specific rejections or objections could I potentially get? You know, I've been working with a ton of human resource and employee relations, ethics and legal lately. And we get into sections around hailing resistance and very specific maladaptive behaviors. And you just bring up, you know, I've got some typed up into a deck, and you bring them up and you can kind of see light bulbs going off in their head. Like, why in the world I've heard that 1,000 times. Why haven't I thought through, if you're in a, you know, a harassment conversation and the person's married and you're not prepared for, well, I would never do that because I'm a married man, or, you know, you're in a bullying, that's, you know, I would never be hostile toward my employees. I love them. They, you know, ask anybody I've ever worked with, they'll tell you what kind of guy I am. And that should be thought of before ever even walking in the room. Those boxes need to be checked prior to. Second layer is think about things that just automatically influence psychological resistance, like subject fear, like the environment that you're in, like yourself. You know, the things that we do and say that create unnecessary stress, and write them down, you know, write them down and have a little cheat sheet with you and just go through them in the hotel the night before. You know, silly things that people, when they're going 100 miles an hour, aren't thinking about. The third thing is, again, is continuing education. We're working off of, we found a group that wrote a book called Orbit, and it's this incredible, significant study that was done strictly around rapport for clinical psychologists. And they created this orbit model that breaks down what they witnessed during thousands and thousands of hours of review of interrogation, that shows, based on what the interrogator was seeing, certain maladaptive responses. What they witnessed over and over again is they had certain people that were in the room in lead chair that either left the person there or made it worse based on their either maladaptive response or even trying to be adaptive to that. But they also discovered very quickly during a study that there were certain folks that were motivating people from that maladaptive behavior and moving them over to where they were willing to. So, you know, models going out and researching, we brought these folks on our IAI platform, a couple of them, the Allisons, they were amazing. We're doing further education, having them educate us as well a little bit more so we can incorporate some of this. Growth, right? You know, not thinking that everybody thinks they're witty in this game, you know, and you and I have probably been called that a couple of times, and witty doesn't always work out for us, does it? It's one thing to be savvy and to be able to open your mouth and have something clever come out of it. It doesn't mean it's going to work. And it doesn't even mean that it's proper. You know, it might shut down somebody, you know, from continuing to vomit maladaptive, you know, behavior in front of you. Doesn't mean it's going to assist in the process. So, yeah, there's so many things that we can do to make ourselves just mentally tougher around this rejection that we face from everybody, I think, that we talk to.
I love all of that. And I'll put a link to Orbit in the show notes so people can find it quickly when they go through it.
Yeah, but fascinating.
I love the part that you talk about in all of that, but it's also understanding is an extension of what you said. It's understanding where these statements can lead you as opposed to where they're stopping you from going.
Yeah.
So if somebody says, I would never do that because I'm a married man, oh, he's trying to put up a roadblock. But it's actually a swinging gate.
Yeah.
So I just need to get that gate swinging the other way, help him save face. And we can actually use these statements to get to where we want to be or where we need to go. And you were always one of the best people that I saw navigate that with a nice, calm smile, a little pause. And in the videos, you could see like a video game, like the other person's meter just drop three or four bars as you get through it. But it was always helping people save face. It was never, that's bullshit. It was never, stop lying to me. It was never, did you think that was going to work? It was never, you know, I did an investigation, right? It was never, that's the best you could come up with. Like all of these witty things that unfortunately, and we've reviewed enough interrogations in our lives, we've heard plenty of people say those things, but that's not what works. It's accepting it, helping people save face and moving with the current, not against the current, that works. And that's as true as the kitchen table as it is the interrogation table.
You learn, right? You get beat and you don't allow it to happen the same way again. That's the name of the game. We were all there. We all started from scratch. We all probably at one point in time thought we were better than we were. And then we get, if we're blessed, around other people who are willing to be brutally honest with us and say, you're nowhere near where you could be if you wanted to put in the effort. And by the way, use these skill sets daily. Don't screw it up when you leave, you know, when you walk off the plane just to go have dinner with folks, use it there too. This whole game is about maturity and growth and being willing to evolve and outworking the people that you're walking into the room with in whatever setting.
Yeah. And that maturity and growth is more important outside of the investigation interview as it is inside. It's taking that maturity and growth and applying it. You've met my wife. Anybody who meets my wife and I has to immediately think her, him, what? Like, did she lose
one of life's little mysteries.
But if I hadn't, honestly, the maturity in conversations and in relationships that I've learned interviewing is what allows me to more successfully, I'm not going to say successfully, but more successfully than I otherwise would have, you know, navigate the situation. This is what I apply as a parent. And I heard those stories from you and Drew long before I ever had Gabe. So, you know, you again were kind of laying that track and showing that example for how to do that. And the same is true with Wayne and his kids, listening to how you guys talked about it and you worked through that issue. So I'm curious as we start to push time a little bit here, and I know you got a lot going on today, so I really appreciate this. How did being a professional interrogator make you a better father?
Yeah, from bank. The good Lord that I worked for this outfit for 3 years before my little guy was even brought into this world. Because I don't think, and I'm not saying that I was the greatest pop on the planet, but I, with the training that I got early on and how hyper vigilant the training process was, immediately allowed me to recognize that, okay, a lot of this is going to be applicable when Drew was Gabe's age, when Drew was a teenager, when Drew was going off to, you know, his law enforcement career, his reservist career and things like that. I had a clearer understanding of kids are going to be kids, okay? And we were kids once too. You were probably 10 times worse than me as a kid. That's probably fact, so don't even try to dispute it.
No, it might not be fact. It might have been 20.
But I think I was able to walk through a different door and recognize that kids, man, they're going to do whatever they can to get away with whatever they can. And we probably did the exact same thing. So let me allow myself to use what I have learned to utilize on larger kids that we deal with to open up that ability to not shut him down every time he wanted to come to me and say something that probably wasn't going to end up being historically correct. Now, I'm lucky. Drew was an easy one. All he cared about was playing ball. He didn't want to party or do anything crazy. So I was pretty fortunate. But he was still all boy, man. He was still all boy. He still wanted to get things done and still had some pretty good stories. But able to use some of the strategies that we implement in our negotiations of sales, or interviews of clientele or things like that, to make sure he felt comfortable enough to even come to me and be willing to attempt to minimize or omit or whatever he wanted to do. But we had that line of communication and we had that trust built in. He didn't always get to the end in the way that he had hoped. So, you know, there were times where, you know, we definitely had to reach an agreement that was pretty much top down. But there were also times that I allowed him to feel like he played the role in the final decision-making process, good or bad, which kept that line of communication, kept him being willing to come to me. And, you know, still to this day, you know, he's now in his own career. And, you know, he's never been through a class or anything, but he's watched a million videos, you know, and he's seen all of our material. And he's always asking deep questions, you know, because of what he does. And every once in a while, he has that moment like, holy shit, you used that on me, didn't you? Or, you know, I remember you saying that to me one time. Or I remember I said this about my mom and you kind of softly corrected me and made me feel like that what I was saying was valuable, but it wasn't appropriate. But you didn't like, you know, shut me down by just, you know, crashing through the glass door and making me feel like an idiot for saying it. So he's having some of these light bulb moments and I'm hoping that he'll take those moments and use them in his own career.
I'm sure he will. I have no doubt that, you know, Drew's his own man. His brain was wired his own way. Yeah. I have no doubt that he is where he is today and will achieve what he achieves in life because of the example that you set for him all along the way. There's several others
for sure, pal. Several others besides me, man. If I was his guiding light, I would feel a lot more uncomfortable than I do. But I'm very lucky that I had some valuable lessons installed in me before that little dude was even hatched, so that I didn't screw it up right off the bat. And yeah, I'm hoping that he does take some of the lessons from myself and, you know, all the other inner circle people in his life who have been mentors. He's had several, and I vetted him, by the way, and they were solid people. So yeah, it's good. It's good to surround yourself with people who know what the hell they're talking about. And I think a lot of folks don't get that luxury, right? They're surrounded with the complete opposite. So we can't, you know, why do we have so much litigation centric to what we do for a living? Because you don't know what you don't know. So people need to search it out on their own if they don't have the benefit of organizations that are providing them for it.
Yeah, those who talk the most or talk the loudest or brag the most might sound pretty cool in a cocktail party, but they're probably not the one I'm going to be calling when shit hits the fan. And I need somebody who I know I can trust to have the goods to deliver with the chips on the table.
Fact. Couldn't said it better myself. Yeah, some people are more fortunate than others. I guess I was one of the fortunate ones to, you know, be surrounded by people who were willing to tell me I didn't know what the hell I was talking about.
Well, I am as well, and you were one of those people. So I'm going to correct you a little bit on one thing. The first time we met was actually in Schaumburg. The second time we met was in Illinois, was in New York. So I had the misfortune, of having to sit through Chris Norris's class, I think twice in like a 3-month period. So the first one was awesome. I show up the next time in Schaumburg. I walk in. It was nice. He's like, dude, don't I know you? I'm like, yeah, we did this like 2 months ago. He's like, well, here, let me introduce you to Brett. So I walked across the hall. Ended up in your class. That was the first time we met. Then maybe like a year or two after that is when we met in New York. So we socialized a little bit in Schaumburg, but the whole team was there and you guys were doing your thing. And so there wasn't a whole lot of time. But when we were in New York, I remember meeting the first night and how funny that turned out to be several times. But then it was the second night where you invited me just to sit down on a table at the patio and talk. There were no doubt drinks on that table. But you invited me just to sit there and talk. And that was, I knew that I was already passionate about interview and interrogation, and that's what I wanted to do. I never met an audit I couldn't pencil whip. But I also never met an investigation that I didn't feel like I could find a way to resolve. And so, but our conversation that night was really the first conversation that caused me to go, you know what? There's a bigger career out there for this. And I think I'm confident enough to go pursue it. So from that point on, you have been a true friend, a true mentor. You've given me a hard time when I needed it. You've given me the no shit feedback when I've needed it. You've supported me along the way. And, you know, when I just think about my career, obviously in life, there's a lot. When I think about my career, there's a couple of people that I would be nowhere if it wasn't for them. And you are at the top of that list. So thank you so much for even taking an hour today to share some of the lessons you shared with me, with everybody else. But I also want to take this time to say thank you for all you've done and all you've meant to me.
That's very kind, man. I take that to heart. I really, really appreciate that. And I'll reiterate, I've learned from you too, brother. And you didn't land with WZ on accident, and you're not successful today with your organization by accident either. You're a hard worker, and you're just not willing to settle. And I'm damn proud of you. And I know our relationship will continue to go on.
There's no doubt about that. Well, hey, man, I know Houston is in a bit of a crunch right now, and you and your wife have a lot of other things to go tend to and take care of. So thank you for carving out an hour in the midst of the madness. Again, it's pure Brett Ward, so I guess it was destined to work out this way. But thank you so much. This means a lot to me that you took the time to do this. I can't wait to see you the next time. Hopefully our planes keep landing in the same cities over the next couple of months and we get to do this again soon.
You got it, brother. Give my love to the family, man.
You got it. You as well. Take care. Be safe. Brett, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for the conversation. And thank you for the amazing ideas and experiences that you shared with us. It's a real privilege to finally be able to share with everybody else just some of the great ideas that you have shared with me over the year. So thank you so much for taking the time. Just that simple line of hear less, listen more. So impactful when you stop to think about it. One of the things that you mentioned over and over again during the conversation was just realizing that whoever is in front of you is the next human being for you to interact with. They're not a victim. They're not a witness. They're not a suspect. They're not a customer. They're not an antagonist. They are the next human being for you to engage with. That was a very powerful set of statements. You talked about the power of having a plan B. Plan A is usually not going to work. So having that plan B helps build confidence and really needing those clear goals in order to plan your conversation backwards and achieve the success that you're looking for. So much packed into a short conversation, Brett. Thank you very much. And I hope everybody took as many notes as I did during that conversation, got as much from it as me, and takes the time to reach out and connect with Brett. He has so much to offer and so much to share. Brett, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us again today. Thank you for being here again. Please, before you go, take a moment to like the show, share the show, comment on the show, subscribe to the show. We really appreciate all the support. Let us know what you want to hear more. And of course, before we go, let's thank our sponsors one more time. Humantel, please head over to humantel.com, enter the code INCLUSIVE25, and choose the online training program that you feel is best for you to start the process of learning to realize and recognize when people's emotions are changing and what that likely means in the context of the situation by evaluating their facial expressions and nonverbal communication. That's over at humantel.com. For the professional interviewers, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. Do your research on the International Association of Interviewers. Is that right for you and your team? Are those educational events you should be attending? And is the Certified Forensic Interviewer program right for you? And is that the key to getting you to your next level in your career? And while you're online, please head over to inclusive.com. Learn more about the customized programs our clients ask us to teach to their senior leadership, sales teams, and HR teams to teach them how to encourage people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences every day. We really appreciate y'all being here. Thank you so very much. Stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.